connected.
Hi, I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy show for you today. Jess Chapp will give us a story about Kite's Nest in Hudson, the education center and project along the waterfront there. And we'll also hear all about hay from Brendan Donegan and his ag report coming up this hour. It's been a wet season for hay farmers. We'll also hear about the Burdett Birthing Center in Rensselaer County, whether it will close or not. There was a public hearing held on Monday and by Attorney General Letitia James, and we'll hear some reactions at that hearing later in the hour. On the WGXC Morning Show, first we'll hear the local news and national headlines from the Public News Service and the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts in just a moment. Stay tuned to the WGXC Morning Show.
The news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
Wayfarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David Gorin of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, September 19th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Rachel Silberstein reports in the Times Union that dozens of people testified in favor of keeping the Burdett Birth Center at Samaritan Hospital in Troy open at a public hearing on September 18th at Russell Sage Bush Memorial Center. If the center closes, there will be no birthing services in Rensselaer County, and there are already no birthing services in Greene or Columbia counties. Zanetta Gary with the Save Burdett Birth Center Coalition said, quote, "The closure of Burdett Birth Center is not just going to create issues in this community, but it's going to exacerbate existing issues. Anyone with any exposure to public health knows that black women are in danger, and this closure is only going to further that," unquote. The State Department of Health must sign off on the planned closure of the center at the end of the year. Officials with St. Peter's Health Partners say the birthing center is losing $2.3 million annually. A 2020 merger by the hospital eliminated services such as tubal ligations and vasectomies at Samaritan Hospital, but also had officials promising other services would remain. Attorney General Letitia James said at the hearing, quote, "We must address the fact that the closure will break a promise made to the community at the time of the original merger, promises to their community, to their donors, and to my office, promises about the level of care that will be provided. The closure would not only undermine this process, but it may very well erode trust in the hospital system altogether," unquote. Read more about the story in the Times Union. Luke Partsnow reports in New York State of Politics that sales tax collections in New York were up 4% in August over a year ago, according to State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office. DiNapoli said in a statement, quote, "Local sales tax collections in August continue a pattern of moderate increases in 2023. With overall growth having all but returned to pre-pandemic rates, local officials should budget accordingly and monitor cash flow for the foreseeable future," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Thomas C. Zambito reports in the Democrat and Chronicle that tolls on the New York State Thruway will increase by 5% in January. Another toll increase in 2027 will have E-ZPass users paying about a nickel per mile, up from the current 4.5 cents. Those paying tolls by mail in passenger cars would pay 8.6 cents per mile, up from the current 5.8 cents. Thruway officials say 85 bridges need to be replaced over the next 10 years, costing $800 million. Officials said, quote, "Factoring the hundreds of bridges that will require replacement long thereafter, the costs escalate into the $6 to $7 billion range, which the existing toll rate structure will not support," unquote. Read more about this story in the Democrat and Chronicle, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, September 19th. Local early morning temperatures fall between what is normally our two coldest points on the map. We got 51 degrees in Tannersville and 57 in Steventown. Everyone else is somewhere in between. Regional average soil temperature is 66 degrees. It will be dry today with a chance for fog in the morning. We'll see a high of 68 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 47 degrees. Then, tomorrow, it bounces back up to 72 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 46 degrees. Then, Thursday, we'll have a high of 71. Friday, still nice, high of 74. The weekend is looking, so far, kind of moist, but let's see how that dials in as we approach it. We see foliage reports are out and the color gradients are beginning in the western edge of the Catskill Mountains. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:30 a.m., high tide at 5:48 a.m., low tide again at 12:25 p.m., and high tide once again at 6:15 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 70 degrees and the tide strength is high. Sunset today will be at 6:46 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:35 a.m. Looking way up, we see that an Hadouken struck yesterday, creating G2 class geomagnetic storms, sparking off auroras around the Arctic Circle and bringing radio propagation to its knees. It will be terrible until dark, with some bands outright closing. Overnight, it won't be much better, so good luck. Plasma winds will be average at 568 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. There are medium chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 139, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
This is Jessica Chapp with Recipes for Belonging, a series produced for WGXC 90.7 FM. Recipes for Belonging highlights spaces in the Hudson Valley region where belonging is cultivated through shared experiences and storytelling. This segment focuses on the Social Justice Leadership Academy, organized and facilitated by Kite's Nest, a center for liberatory education in Hudson, New York. During this year's summer program that wrapped up on August 4th, I spoke with the Arts and Media Director, Sharice Johnson, the founder and current executive director, Kai Weidman, and senior fellows about what Kite's Nest is and what it means to them. Deswan Smith, a senior fellow, also collected interviews and audio at Waterfront Wednesdays, which is featured in this segment.
Okay, so can you please tell me both of your names?
I'm Deja.
I'm Rihanna.
Okay, and can you please, how old are you?
I'm 16.
I'm 17.
Cool, and what does Kite's Nest mean to you?
Kite's Nest is a place where you can go and you can express your creativity and you don't have to feel like you're being ridiculed or mocked, and you can have your ideas and be in a safe space with adults that make you feel welcomed.
Mm. I agree.
That's all you gotta say. Alright, cool. Well, I would say the same thing. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Can you introduce yourself and begin by sharing what led you to create Kite's Nest?
Yeah. My name is Kaya Weidman, and I've lived here in this community for a little over 20 years, which is all of my adult life. There's many versions of the story of what led me to create Kite's Nest, but at the root of it was a lifelong love and passion and vision for a way of learning in which young people have a lot of agency. Ever since I was a young person and was navigating my own learning path as a child and a teen, all the times that I felt most alive were times where I was learning in a space that I was choosing to be in. So when we bring together people with common experience, and especially when that common experience is one that has made them feel isolated, and we experience the collective as a source of power, it transforms pain to power, and that is the source of the most powerful forms of movement for transformative change, for justice. And that's where I see the connection between, you know, a really beautiful, fun, playful learning space and collective liberation on a large systemic scale. Basically, the way we got people to come to our space before they really were sold on us was we had good food and juice. So, you know, you just have to realize that you have to be honest with, like, what it's like, come for this, stay for that. You know, it's like, come for the food, stay for the belonging.
Need to be undone. The school system's broken, Hudson not the only one. We need equal rights and we need equal power. By investing in each other, we multiply our power. We must speak up and make the right choice. We must come together with a unified voice.
My name is Sharice Johnson. I am the art and media director at Kite's Nest. Kite's Nest is a liberatory education space. It is a place for young people to learn without, like, the constraints that you see in regular schools. There are many components of Kite's Nest. There is the daytime program, and then there's the after-school program, which I lead, and Arts Under the Sun. And then there's the Regen program, which is the program that our teens are learning how to be entrepreneurs. And then there's the SJLA program, which is the Social Justice Leadership Academy. It's a place where we learn about social justice and we turn it into art. In the summertime, the SJLA program is a 5-week program. It usually starts with our rites of passage, where the older youth, we call the senior fellows, are making a commitment to the work that is to come. It's a moment of them talking about, like, what their goals are and making a commitment to themselves of how they will grow. Yeah.
you felt that you've changed?
Oh, I've changed in many ways being Kaisness. They helped me with, like, a lot of, like, I never really knew how to, like, take accountability. Because in my house, no one knows nothing about that. You just blame someone and boom, and that's it. But, like, for me, like, I was just, like, I was always, like, used to being, like, oh, I didn't do this, like, it was this. But now I know how to, like, actually look at what I did. Also, like, they helped me with being, like, very self-aware. Because, like, before I wouldn't really know how to, like, see the things that I'm doing that are wrong. I would just be like, it's not really bad. But now I can actually, like, look back at what I've done, reflect on it. They just, like, there's a lot of, like, key things that they taught me in my life that I've carried on for the rest of it. And it's just, like, it's beautiful because Kaisen has really helped me to be the best version of myself that I am today. It's helped me to be happy, helped me to, like, figure out my problems so that I could fix them. Not only fix them, but I could, like, take the methods that they taught me in the future.
The second week has been led by me. It's the music week, and it is a time where we do some songwriting, and it's usually based on a theme, and this year it was based in education justice, which is just the conversation of how youth feel when they're in school. What are the things that they feel are the injustices that are happening around them? How can they fight it, combat it? And yeah, we made two songs this year from that, and that was in collaboration with Beautiful Racket. And also this really amazing recording artist, Rainier, and his daughter, B-Lyric, who is also like a really beautiful performer. And also Taina Asili, who is this radical, like, bad A, like, Puerto Rican goddess. We love her so much. She's so great. She's come to Kite's Nest to help us write music.
I have a mission for humanity.
You guys, it's been such a pleasure and honor to be with you all again. I know some of you are meeting me for the first time. I just really appreciate coming to Kaisness. This is a really special, sacred place, and I hope that you continue to explore your creativity, because I'm going to tell you right now that we will not have change on this planet without it. Not just creativity in general, but your creativity, specifically you, each and every one of you, is essential to make change on this planet. So I hope that you take every opportunity you can to exercise it, whether it's writing poetry, singing, expressing your voice, dancing, moving your body, right? Cooking in the kitchen, whatever way that you express yourself is essential, is important. Your voice is essential and important and matters. So thank you all again. Peace, love, and liberation.
In my song slash my other two people, Graciela and Harmony, there's like this, it's actually like a two-part song. It's like, we need equal rights, we need equal power. I think that's what sticks out to me the most, like, we need equal rights, we need equal power. Because, like, you know, I feel like as, like, Black people, like, we work hard. And, like, we're still not, like, I guess, respected enough, which is why, like, we have to fight for the rights, and we'll still continue to fight.
Okay, so our song is basically about, like,
what we need.
What we need to do.
And what we should do.
Yeah. So the chorus, the hook goes, bright like the sun, together we come to fight what is wrong, to take back our freedom. That goes two times. So bright like the sun, together we come to fight what is wrong, to take back our freedom. And then the verse, we're still working through it, so...
So verse one goes,
first some things need to be undone. The school system's broken. Huts is not the only one. We need equal rights.
We need equal power. By investing in each other, we multiply our power.
We must
speak up, make the right choice.
We must
come together with a unified voice. Knowing not everything just black and white. We must fight to bring things under the light. And then now Melina is working on verse two, and she's going to send that to me later on. But we got the ending part as well.
Which is really good, which I think you were talking to Henri. Henri, he's doing this part. Yeah. So it goes,
freedom is won by the radical ones. Freedom takes ours, don't run to our power.
Free to expand like the homies have planned.
We'll have the power. The future is ours. Yeah, that's the ending part.
We just need the verse two, and we're good.
And we're recording.
Then we move into our Healing Justice Week, and it's really teaching youth like the importance of their mental health and their own health.
Name?
LeBron Frazier.
Okay, LeBron. So, like, can we talk about mental health real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. What do to feel good?
So in the morning, like, when the sun, like, first coming out, I like to walk my dog. Like, get, like, my, like, body flowing and stuff, you know, for the fresh air, the nice breeze, and, you know, like, and usually I go to Juice Branch to get, like, a smoothie and, like, some, like, ginger shot, too. But if I get down, I, like, take care of myself, you know, hydrate, make sure I'm, like, you know, my body fuels is okay, eat something, and, you know, you can't help yourself, like, you can't help other people, so, yeah.
Then our last week, just about how we come together, so it's putting on our show, which we have been doing at the Waterfront Wednesdays, which has been really beautiful.
My name is Pierre Rice, and I currently just performed 40 Acres and a Mule with Melina. This was written back in 2019 when the SJLA Marathon theme was called The Marathon Continues, Rest in Peace, Nipsey Hussle. And I just want to say thank you to the fans, to the supporters, to everyone for all the love, for all the hard work, and for the support. When I say hard work are you being here, whether that was you parking your car, whether that was you taking off for work, whether that was you saying, okay, kids, I have to cook a little later tonight because we got to go see them perform. I thank you for the hard work, and I thank you for the love. And yeah, it's only up from here. We got to perform this song one more time. We got to close it out. We got to do good. Thank you. See, I'm ready for Hollywood.
Okay, and how are you feeling, Kendall, before your performance?
Before my performance, I usually always feel a little nervous, but I know that I'll most likely do better.
You know what?
I can even do my song. He's gonna do a little.
Yeah. Okay.
I found out about Kitesness through my cousin. My cousin was going to the SJLA program, which is what we're doing now. And she brought me to Roots and Rebels. I was around maybe 8 years old at the time. And I remember she also brought me in this one day. They were, I think it was Space 101 they were doing. And they were making music. And that's like my first time like seeing them do music at Kitesness. And I remember like just watching and observing them doing it, and then them asking me to do it, and then I was like, okay. And I remember they were like, they were telling me that like they were gonna continue tomorrow morning, and I remember I got up bright and early just to be there. And then after that, I was like 10 at that moment when I went to record that song. And then I remember Kaya found me at the youth center while I was like on the computer, and she was telling me more about Kite's Nest and telling me about SJLA. And then I remember she stopped at my house to give me permission slip and then helped me, like, you know, fill it out. And after that, I started going, and now it's been, I think, 6 years since I've been going. Yeah. But why the hell are we always afraid to be the person that we are, being scared to shine brighter than stars, all of the kids that the school system hurting, the things that they tried just ain't really working, no one can dictate the things that I say. Cause in our future, I could never be held by chains. In our future, we are your friends. We be saying to the world, come on. We just wanna be understood. We do the things that they never could. Watch out, cause we're coming through. Young ones, there's nothing we can do. Give us power, give us freedom. That's all we deserve.
Just imagine doing what we are told.
Yeah. Sow a seed, coming back to sow a dream. What you know about me? Coming from the lowest strings, well, you know it's deep. Pipelines to the beach.
The issue I resonate with most would be police brutality and gun violence. And the reason being is because I had a cousin that was actually shot and killed due to gun violence, obviously. And it was just really hard, and I just didn't really know how to, like, deal with it. And then I remember, like, going to Kaisness about the situation. I remember they helped me like organize a protest for him. And we marched up to the courthouse and we went inside the courthouse and the courthouse locked us out. And I mean, like, it was like they locked us out, but they knew that they were threatened by our power. They were threatened by like hearing us, you know, because a lot of people when we were walking, they were paying attention. They're like, what's going on? Like, and I was giving out pamphlets while we were walking so they can understand why we're doing what we're doing. And it was really beautiful, even though like it didn't do much. It was really beautiful to see like a lot of people come out and show support for another black man, you know, in our community.
People are often inspired by our youth who can go to a protest and speak from their heart. And I think part of that is because we're constantly affirming them and letting them know that your truth is yours and you are able to share it or not share it. That's on you. Also, you don't have to share it with words. You can share it through art. You can share it through music.
We've consistently seen young people go through a transformation of stepping into their full selves and feeling that sense of choice and agency and confidence when they are in a place where they feel like they belong, where they feel seen, and where they feel listened to. And it's tragically rare that there are spaces like that, but young people are very quick to recognize a space that authentically sees and cares for them, and they respond by sharing their gifts.
Okay, can you tell me your name?
Harmony.
Graciela.
Oh, Angelise.
Henri.
Right, and can you tell me your ages?
13.
16.
12.
15.
Cool. And can you all tell me what Kitesness means to you?
Supporting each other and caring for each other.
Feeling safe and welcome.
Yeah, like what she said, like I think it like means like to like feel like safe around each other and like feel like supported as like a whole.
Kitesness is basically family.
This is Jessica Chapp, and you have been listening to the series Recipes for Belonging for WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next up, we have 2023 new music from local band Jaded Azurides. That's Columbia County poet Karen Schomer and legendary bassist Mike Watt. Here is the song Songed from their 2023 release, Number 6.
In the blue motel of sleep, on the purple beat, a hand touches the piano key. I dip beneath layers, deep layers of voices, emerge into a hallway. Closed doors of bedrooms, brass knobs with mechanisms designed to stop me. Rooms with mothers and fathers, sofas, rugs, mantelpieces. The complete Yale Shakespeare, surprising heaviness of small blue books. I whisper to the books, it is fortunate that I touched him in the blue motel of sleep.
This is Brendan Donegan with the Ag Report for WGXC 90.7 FM. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Columbia and Greene counties produce over $100 million of agricultural goods a year. The Ag Report looks behind the stats to highlight the people and issues involved in Twin Counties food production. Brendan Donegan interviews local artisanal and mid-scale providers of crops, wool, dairy, fish, and timber, and those at our cooperative extension, chambers of commerce, and tourist board offices who help market our agricultural products. Today I'm in Hudson with
Christian Malzaski of Cornell Cooperative Extension.
And today we're talking hay. You know, that grassy stuff you see rolled up in bundles in fields in the Columbia Green area. Well, Christian, what is hay?
So I'm going to give you the literal definition as found in the dictionary or nowadays online. So hay is grass, legumes, or other herbaceous plants that have been cut and dried to be stored for use as animal fodder. So it's grass, legumes, which would be something like alfalfa, other herbaceous plants such as forbs, which would be like clover, that are grown in the field. You cut them, you dry them, you bale them, and you store them for feed purposes.
Okay, so there are grasses. Let me review this. There are grasses. There are legumes, which are like alfalfa.
Yes.
And then there's clover, which we're all familiar with.
Yes.
Okay. Are these different plants for different purposes?
So they have different nutritional values. They make different types of hay for different purposes, you would say. So someone that would take a mixed grass bale, which is, you know, some different types of grasses, maybe it has some legumes in it, not alfalfa or something else, but maybe it has some clover in it, you would use that for, you know, cattle, goats, sheep. But just a clean grass hay bale of hay, just straight timothy or straight one type of grass or straight alfalfa, you can use those for livestock, but they tend to be on the higher price side. So you see those a lot going to equestrian operations.
Okay. In other words, horses.
Yes.
Okay. How is hay processed?
So it's grown in the field thanks to Mother Nature and the work of the farmer. Once it reaches proper stage, it's cut. It's then set out to dry where it's cut at. It's rake or teted, whatever term you want to use there. Once it's dried out fully, it's baled up, and then it's stored properly to avoid any mold or fungus that might grow on it.
Can it be grown all year?
Not in this part of the country.
Okay. They have no plants that grow in the wintertime here that would do that?
No, not for hay purposes here. Nothing that is going to grow over the winter. That is more in the southeastern, southwestern, western United States.
Okay. Why is hay important for farmers?
So it's an important source of income for many farms. And then it also, for people that maybe don't grow it for themselves, they don't have the acreage to do so or not, it's important to get their animals through the winter with supplementing nutrition along with feed and everything.
Okay. Are there farmers, other farmers who grow only hay?
There are plenty of farms that grow only hay, or plenty of farms that work with a landowner that has acreage that they just want something done with it, and they grow hay, and that farm, you know, takes the hay for them.
Do most farmers grow at least some hay for their livestock?
That's a yes and no.
Okay.
I would say used to be yes, but with the price of land nowadays, a lot of the smaller farms that want to have livestock maybe can't afford that cost of the land to add on extra acreage. So they have just a smaller operation with the livestock and then supplement with hay that they purchase off of others.
But what you're saying then, I'm kind of figuring out that hay is a staple, meaning it's a must for somebody who has livestock.
It's very much a staple, especially in the dairy industry. And with livestock, because it provides that important source of food and nutrition through the winter months when animals can't be turned out to pasture.
What are current prices per bale?
So it's going to range. Right now we're looking at, for the mixed hay bale types of grasses, it's going to be around $6. And then for straight timothy bales, you're going to be on the higher end, around $40. And then Alfalfa is going to be a little closer to Timothy bales, but not as high.
Is Timothy clover?
No, Timothy is a grass.
It's a kind of grass.
Yes.
Goes by the name of Timothy.
Yep, goes by the name of Timothy.
Okay, how much weight is in a bale?
That's a good question. So the round bales can be pretty hefty. You see them sitting around. They're moved with tractors or forklifts operation. The square hay bales, just depending on how much they were condensed when they were baled, you know, 5 to 20 pounds.
What's the outlook for prices in the future?
So right now they're kind of stable, but as we get later into the fall, the rains in this part of the state really affected hay production. You know, you usually have around 4 cuttings of hay you can get off during the season.
Yeah.
But that's going to be lower. It's sort of everywhere. Some people in the area have been able to get 4. Other people have been able to get 2, just depending, you know, the rains that came through since late June.
Mm-hmm.
Is somewhere every other day for areas. Other ones, you know, maybe they were able to get it out there and dry it for 3 days and get it out of there before the rains came. So we're probably going to see some higher prices this winter just with a lower hay cost. And we're probably going to see some local farms that are going, you know, to surrounding regions, maybe into central New York or up mm-hmm. towards the Canadian border, down into Pennsylvania to have to get some hay.
We had massive rains last night in this area. It was like a biblical level of rains. So I guess that's going to further put pressure on the prices.
Yeah. I mean, any now, like I know central New York and areas, 4th cuttings are coming off, but again, it's been staggered here. So maybe someone that was, you know, cut this week and it didn't dry down yet, those rains, you know, wash those nutrients out of the grass when they're drying.
Does the price of hay have any effect on food prices at the supermarket?
So it does. The increase of everything in farming practices, from your fertilizers to if you are conventional and use pesticides, anything along those lines, that when they increase, the end product increases, which means that the increase in the supermarket. Now, it's not going to be horrendous prices increases, but realize that when animals need nutrition over the winter and those prices increase, that is then reflected at the supermarket, but just a few cents here and there.
How is hay preserved?
How is hay preserved?
Yeah, because it could get mold if you leave it out.
It can, so it has to be stored in well-ventilated, dry area. You don't want it to get wet. You don't want humidity building up in there or anything like that. So it's just good airflow and keep it dry. If it's been there for a long time, I mean, usually you purchase what you know you're going to need, maybe mm-hmm. a little extra just to be safe. So the only time you ever see it is that it sits for a long time is if there's just been mass production of hay. You have a great year and people, mm-hmm. you know, the price is lower on it because everybody's got it and you just may not be able to sell it all. And you can see when hay gets old and you can compost it or, you know.
But you would never feed it to
No, you don't want to feed it when it gets old. And you definitely don't want to feed anything with mold or anything like that mm-hmm. in it, because that can cause health issues for the animal.
Did the heavy frost in May, I think it was the 17th of May, have any effect on hay production?
So it kind of slowed first cutting a little bit, and that's, you know, first cutting is not always the best cutting of grass because everything comes up at different times. So you're getting stuff that may not have a lot of nutrients in it and some that may have nutrients in it. So it slowed the first cutting, but after that it was really the rain this year that has done more damage to hay production.
We'll get to the question of the rain towards the end. But do you have any facts about dollar value of hay produced in this area?
I don't. That can be found. Usually the USDA takes that, and then there'll be a New York Ag Report done through Cornell's Economics Department that sort of takes a look at what went on through the year, you know, what it started at and what it's ending at. But they don't really get all those prices together till last quarter of the year.
Okay, so we might see it at the end of this year or beginning
of
next year?
End of this year or beginning of the next year, the report will come out and it will show the mm-hmm. progress of hay pricing throughout
and
this year.
And where can listeners find that information when it does come out?
Cornell's Agricultural Economics Department, they will post those online. And then also Ag and Markets will have that information available.
Ag and Markets through Cornell?
Ag and Markets uses the information with Cornell. Mm-hmm. I would say Ag and Markets makes it a little more user-friendly for people to look at out there. Where Cornell's side, it has a lot of, like, they'll put in what the input costs were and everything. Mm-hmm. So it can be used by the general farmer just to look at what his operation did. But for just anybody looking at it, it's a whole lot of information that you probably don't want to look at. And so you might just want to look at the Ag and Markets report.
So Ag and Markets, if somebody goes online and just types in Ag and Markets, they can get this information?
Yeah, and Ag and Markets also releases them. Okay. Yeah, and the USDA as well has a New York crop report that comes out. It shows crop progress, and then they report prices as well. And then the crop progress report comes out weekly, and their prices, I believe, come out quarterly with USDA.
Okay. Final question. Make hay while the sun shines, my grandfather used to say. Was he right?
No other time to do it unless you want wet hay.
So if you have the opportunity, you got to grab it.
That is correct.
Okay. This has been Brendan Donegan in conversation with Chris Malzatsky from the Cornell Cooperative Extension. Thanks, Christian. And remember, listeners, accomplish your goals while you can. The old folks were right. Make hay while the sun shines. This has been Brendan Donegan with the Ag Report for WGXE 90.7 FM.
From the WGXE Newsroom, this is the WGXE News Update. Alessandra Zissou in the Times Union talks with Ben Fain, the developer with businesses around Hudson's Amtrak station. That is the third busiest station in New York, with approximately 220,000 people arriving or departing. Fain said, and I quote, "Every 45 minutes, it's like a faucet of people coming off the train," end quote. Fain opened Kitty's Market Cafe in the fall of 2020 with breakfast and lunch, and expanded into an adjoining space as Kitty's Restaurant last spring. In October, the restaurant will open for dinner 5 nights a week. He also owns the nearby Grapefruit Wines, and now he is opening The Caboose, a 3,500-foot carbon-neutral private event space in a 19th-century coal barn. The space had a ribbon cutting on September 12th with Governor Kathy Hochul, State Senator Michelle Henchy, Assemblyperson Dee Dee Barrett, and Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson in attendance. Grapefruit Wines will move into The Caboose space next to Kitty's. The Caboose opens October 3rd. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union. Thomas Christopher reports for the Berkshire Eagle that imported Coosa dogwood trees was once championed as a replacement for dying native dogwood trees, but now is considered an invasive species. The tree, introduced into North America from East Asia in the 19th century, has recently been identified as an emerging invasive in the state of New Jersey. In East Asia, monkeys help spread the Coosa dogwood fruits that are the size and color of raspberries. Bethany Bradling, Ph.D., a scientist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, researches invasion ecology and said that there is often a lag between when a plant species is introduced and when it begins to behave invasively. Sometimes that is because of how many plants are introduced or current climate conditions. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Austin Jefferson talks to local band Beethoven in the Daily Freeman. The Claverick-based duo of Maya Bond and Ryan Braun are bandmates and a couple. Braun said, and I quote, "We have a deep understanding of each other that a lot of the time I feel we communicate without words, and the only other time I've heard people talk about that is within musicianship and playing in a band together," end quote. They met in Los Angeles, moved to Philadelphia, then to Braun's hometown in Arlington, Vermont, before finding Hudson. Dave Holvin is currently on the road playing songs from their 2022 album, Light Moving Time, opening for indie rock band Slowpoke. They say they make more money selling merch on tour than selling music. Bond said, and I quote, "I don't want to be a traveling clothing salesperson. I am one, and I'm pretty good at it because I like to make clothes and I like to talk to people, but we're musicians," end quote. The band says the streaming service Spotify grew their audiences but pays them very little. Braun said, and I quote, "The trade-off is they've completely made our work valueless," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Time is short to finish the job. If both sides embrace bipartisanship, a shutdown will be avoided. If the hard right is given a license to run the show, a shutdown is almost inevitable.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says a House GOP short-term spending plan reads like a hard right screed. It would keep the government open an extra month with defense and veterans affairs at current levels, but would cut all other discretionary spending by 8%. The plan doesn't boost disaster relief or Ukraine aid, which Schumer calls an insult to Ukraine and a gift to Putin, days before Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky is to visit Capitol Hill. Several House Republicans have made it clear they aren't in favor either, which makes it hard for Speaker Kevin McCarthy to stop a shutdown in less than 2 weeks.
It's a good thing I love a challenge. So every day is going to be a challenge. We got a long week. We're not September 30th yet.
Senate Appropriations Chair Patty Murray is moving to suspend the rules to circumvent Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson's objection to bundling three fiscal measures.
We, Madam President, cannot let a few senators toss out months of hard work to move us closer to regular order and abandon an overwhelmingly bipartisan effort to do something as basic as funding our government.
Murray wants to vote on funds for agriculture and transportation at the same time as funding for military construction and the Department of Veterans Affairs. The vote to suspend the rules is scheduled later this week. Some California Democrats want to keep former President Donald Trump off the state's March 5th primary ballot, arguing he's ineligible after inciting an insurrection. Four other states are looking at similar moves. Democratic Virginia Representative Jennifer Wexton says she'll finish out her term but not seek re-election due to health concerns. Observers describe her district as up for grabs. Florida Governor and Republican presidential candidate Ron DeSantis is not a fan of Pennsylvania Democratic Senator John Fetterman wearing his trademark shorts and hoodies in the Capitol. DeSantis is critical of the Senate's new relaxed dress code.
We need to be lifting up our standards in this country, not dumbing down our standards in this country.
Although senators can be more informal, staff will still have to wear business clothes. Today's National Voter Registration Day. Data from the census shows while registration rose 2 percentage points in the 2022 election cycle, nearly a third of eligible Americans are still not registered. Paula Bowman is with the League of Women Voters of Michigan.
Well, can't participate in your democracy in terms of elections unless you vote. Even though in Michigan, you can vote up through Election Day, we want to help people avoid that hassle.
Finally, new estimates project that the human population will peak in 40 to 60 years. Demographers in Vienna and the University of Washington say we'll hit about 10 billion, but fall from there. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're updating a story we've been following in Alaska, where fines have been recommended for a church, an associated church organization, and a pastor accused of making alleged illegal and unreported political contributions supporting an effort to repeal ranked choice voting. The Alaska Public Offices Commission staff has recommended combined fines of almost $50,000 to Wellspring Ministries, the Ranked Choice Education Association, Alaskans for Honest Elections, and Art Mathias, a pastor or principal in all three organizations, according to the reporting by Alaska Public Media. The commission staff found that Mathias made donations totaling $90,000 to the Ranked Choice Education Association. That group is registered as an affiliated church organization, but allegedly funneled that money to support Alaskans for Honest Elections, a group leading a citizen ballot initiative signature drive to repeal Alaska's new ranked choice voting and open primary system. The organizations involved were cited for not properly reporting the contributions, other expenses, and proper paid-for-by disclosures on websites and videos. Alaska officials noted that the IRS has jurisdiction on whether illegal charitable tax deductions were taken for the $90,000 contribution. A final decision by the Alaska Public Offices Commission is expected later this month, according to the Anchorage Daily News. We have the commission's report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Well, on Tuesday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 68 degrees. On Tuesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 49 degrees. And on Wednesday, sunny with a high near 71 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 47 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Our next panel consists of Zanetta Gary, Deirdre Shea, and Tier Greene. Zanetta, you may start.
So good afternoon, everyone. You may recognize my name, my face. This is not the first time that I've had the phenomenal opportunity to address the public regarding this travesty that may happen. So some of this may sound familiar to you, but just to start, what's really near and dear to me that I will continue to emphasize while having this conversation is that the closure of Burnett Birth Center is not only going to create issues in the community, it's going to exacerbate existing issues, right? Anyone who has any exposure to public health, any exposure to just the data and the realities of the maternal birth rates or maternal health conditions in New York State know that Black women are in danger, and this closure is only going to further that. I am here today as a Black mother, a Burdette mother. I had my daughter there, Madison, about 5 years ago. Even though that was a few years ago, I think the conditions still remain the same, even back then. That decision to have my daughter at Burdette was because I had the privilege of being aware of the conditions, being aware of the dangers I was potentially in with being a pregnant Black woman, with being a birthing Black woman. And so I did my research as best as I could. And Burdette, again, far and wide, just stood out as far as a place for me to give birth where I felt like I would be safe, I would be seen and heard and be honored. And that's what's most important I want folks to remember during this process, is that it's not just about the access, right? It's about the quality of the access. Yes, there is another center that's not anywhere nearby, but it's easy for folks to say, oh, well, they could just go to Albany. They can just go somewhere else. But the experience is not going to be comparable. And when it comes to being a Black woman, that will make or break our experience. We know that the rates of low birth weights for our children, us returning to get proper prenatal care, the rates are really, really low, and it has been documented that part of that is because of our experience. When we go to the doctor's office and we're being treated as second-class citizens, we're not having our request honored, we're not being seen, we're being treated as if our opinions don't matter, we just don't go back, right? Until it's time to have that baby, and then people pop up in the delivery room after not receiving proper prenatal care. So I really want to emphasize that, again, it's just not about the structure and the accessibility to a center, but it's about the people who work there, too. those people who show so much care and compassion. In my personal experience, that made my birthing experience amazing, and I just couldn't imagine where else I would go if Burdette was closed. I can't imagine where the other black and brown women would go as well, because I've heard stories, horror stories about birth experiences, and I feel very fortunate about my experience, and I really give all that credit to Burdette. I really do. My entire time at my stay there, my birth, my delivery, every part of it, I was welcomed, I was loved, I was cared for, and that really made a really huge difference. And so we'll be doing a huge disservice to the community. There will be countless implications for this closure. But most importantly, I just think about the treatment and the experience of people who would not be able to experience that quality of care that only Burdette can provide. No one else is taking care of us the way they do. And I hope they can continue to care for the community.
Hi, I'm Deirdre Shea. I'm just gonna read from my notes. A little over 19 months ago, I got very sick with a stomach virus. I was very pregnant, and my first child was due imminently. I was unable to keep down any liquids or solids for over 24 hours. I had planned to give birth at home. My midwife, who is licensed for home birth but does not have hospital privileges, became worried about my hydration levels. I was also showing signs of early labor. She sent me to Burdette Birth Center, which is 7 minutes up the hill from my home in South Troy, to receive IV fluids and check the baby's vitals so that I could have the strength and opportunity to give birth at home like I had planned. I was hesitant. I was a little bit afraid to go because I was afraid they were going to make me stay at the hospital and give birth there when I hadn't prepared for that. My midwife assured me that going to Burdette would be safe. She had sent patients to Burdette many times over the years, had relationships with the nurses, midwives, and doctors there, and she called ahead to explain the situation. Because Burdette is birth-centered, they were able to comprehend the situation, trusted my midwife, and I was cared for with a lot of respect for my birth plan. And after giving me fluids and checking on the baby, they let me go home to give birth. It felt like a community care situation. I don't believe I would have had the same support in a different facility. If Burdette didn't exist, I would have had to go to the ER, where the chances are high I would have been pressured to stay to give birth. After I received IV fluids and went home, I also experienced a minor complication where my baby wasn't coming out totally straight. I pushed for over 6.5 hours. That's 3.5 hours longer than the average first-time vaginal birth. My midwife, who was over 20 years experienced, knew that my baby and I weren't at risk, and she was able to guide me to a successful and healthy birth. Again, if I had been in an ER, it is not lost on me that I would have been pressured to take synthetic hormones to speed things along or into a C-section when it wasn't necessary. I'm not being dramatic. We know statistically and anecdotally that this is what happens in hospitals that do not provide holistic and birthing parent-centered care, particularly for poor women, for BIPOC women, especially for Black women, all of whom are already underserved by the healthcare system in our region, which is uniquely urban and rural at the same time. The people that Burdette Birth Center serve in our community deserve holistic and birthing parent-centered care. My personal birth experience was incredibly privileged. Despite the complications, I was able to give birth the way I wanted to, in a way that felt most healthy and safe for me and my child. And if I had to stay at Burdette to give birth, I feel that it would have been a safe place to do so. Or at the very least, has providers that are specialized in birth and birthing complications, which an emergency room does not. Keeping Burdette Birth Center open is the bare minimum in providing safety for the women and the people giving birth in our community. Everyone should have the option, and it should be their right to have nuanced maternal care in the way that is right for them. And the U.S. has the highest maternal rate when compared to countries of similar wealth. We have the technology and resources available to save lives, yet many hospital systems treat the birth experience as a time suck and a liability instead of considering the needs and the health of people giving birth. Burdette is special. If Burdette is closed, it will force more women and birthing parents to go to the ER with doctors and nurses that aren't specialized in birth and women's health, because that will be the only option for many in our community. Again, it was said before, there are other facilities far away, but it's not that simple. Please don't take away this holistic resource from our community.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tia Green. My first experience with our midwives happened back when we were Seton Health over at St. Mary's Hospital. So I have a very long history with them. I was only 16 years old. They provided me with education through